As promised, I do want to go into briefly the role that Sandra Fluke has had on talk radio, because it's important. She was interviewed by the U.S. Congress for reasons that are unknown to me, and obviously she was an inappropriate choice. And she is an extreme advocate of government interference in women's lives, where the government really has to, in her view, provide free contraceptive of all various kinds. We're not talking about just condoms, but we're talking about all forms of contraceptive prescription or not, to any woman at any age at no cost, and to perform abortions without question at any time, even a day before due date, without cost. She's pretty extreme. And she, in testifying to Congress, Rush Limbaugh spoke of her derogatorily. In fact, she has it on her website. She's proud of it. I think it was Rush Limbaugh that called her a slut. Now, I have no idea if she's promiscuous sexually. Don't know the woman. Don't want to know the woman. Don't know if she's heterosexual, homosexual, or bisexual. Don't care. But I'll tell you what. She may or may not be a slut, but she is a despicable individual. For a very long time, the most shrill of the liberal advocates in our nation's politics, which is the homosexual lobby, they are typically the most shrill, the most liberal of liberals, and most often the most engaged, because they are doing everything they can to make homosexuality a cause celeb. They have long sought to nullify the voice of talk radio, particularly programs that are enormously popular, like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. And because they hold and promote a conservative perspective, as do most talk radio shows, they wanted to either promote liberal talk radio programs, and they tried that through Air America, and it failed miserably, or they wanted to silence the conservative viewpoints. And they have worked in all manner in Washington behind the scenes to accomplish this. And thus far, they have been unable, although they have a number of bills in process that would regulate public speech that had a political element of it to it. And they also want to eliminate what they consider to be hate speech. So if you speak against homosexuality, for example, that would be labeled hate speech, and there would be criminal consequences. Well, because they couldn't counter Rush Limbaugh, what they decided to do is put together a national boycott. And Sandra Fluke became the poster child for that boycott, that Rush was out of touch with common decency for calling this moron a slut. And so they used her as the primary tool to encourage national advertisers to boycott not only Rush Limbaugh's program and Sean Hannity's program, but so that they would run no ads on any station, any radio station that carried Hannity or Limbaugh. And what they ended up doing is essentially bankrupting talk radio. The two largest owners of talk radio stations, by far the largest, would be Clear Channel, Premier, started to lose hundreds of millions of dollars. And Cumulus, which is the second largest, was losing tens of millions of dollars. And they moved to sports formats to try to stop the bleeding. And many of them have moved to country music, which is about the only form of music that is really popular on radio. But they've oversaturated both. And there isn't a way now to effectively promote a talk radio show using standard syndication. It's become so desperate that the only stations that the majority of stations now want pay-for-play. They want snake oil salesmen. They want somebody that's got a grossly inflated product, a product that costs 5 cents that you can sell for a dollar, to pay the station for the airtime so that they can promote their snake oil. And it's become a huge factor in this business. But the standard model, which was to have hosts with programming that people were interested in listening to, that then the station and the syndicator would sell ads on behalf of, is between dead and dying. Its future is bleak. The second, third, fourth, and fifth largest syndicators of talk radio programs have gone bankrupt. The industry is a shell of what it used to be. And a lot of this was orchestrated by advocates of homosexuality on behalf of liberal politics using Sandra Fluke. And it has created the mess that we're in now. So you ought to know that this woman, with these stunningly moronic and immoral views, who's this far out of touch with reality, has had a huge influence on what you can hear. Moving on, about a week or so ago, a group of nations got together, and they decided that, you know, maybe Sandra Fluke's not right. Maybe Boko Haram is a problem. And maybe Nigeria is incapable of handling this problem. And maybe we ought to work together to deal with this problem. I mean, we're pounding our chests regarding the victimless transfer of power from Crimea, from the Ukraine to Russia, and positioning all manner of equipment and men and materiel to oppose it. And yet nobody is saying a peep about these 275 girls that have been killed and hundreds more that are murdered each week. Are being not killed, but kidnapped and raped, sold as sex slaves. Then maybe we ought to adjust our priorities here, because we're really looking pretty hypocritical. We're looking as countries about as stupid as Sandra Fluke. And so they got together and they held a news conference, and French President François Hollande, which I am sure wanted to talk about something other than France's failing economy, attended this conference. America sent a low-level representative of our State Department. And they collectively said, you know, we're gonna deploy the tools to try to figure this out, to try to find these girls. And you know, it's astonishing that with America's having hundreds of billions of dollars worth of spy satellites, that we don't know where they are. That with all of our NSA listening devices, we can't track a couple of hundred thugs. This Boko Haram will appear back in the same town and loiter there for hours shooting people, and yet the great spy agency, the NSA, the CIA, is clueless as to where they are or doesn't seem to care. And all of the spy apparatus of the world can't figure this out. Oh, so we said that we would fly a plane over the area and that we'd all share intelligence. And one of two things is happening here. Either the world really doesn't care, just as the world didn't seem to care when the Sudan the fundamentalist Islamic government of the Sudan was murdering 3 million Christians and animists over the course of 20 or 30 years, and no one said a peep. Since it's Africa, no one cares, which would be tell you that our government is indeed has a racist issue. Now, that's hard to fathom because, you know, the President of the United States is African-American. So you wouldn't think that you could have, with this administration, a racist view, we don't care about Africa. So I'm going to discount that. Then the other issue is that we're so European-centric, we're so Northern Hemisphere-centric that our spy apparatus only works in the Northern Hemisphere, that we don't really pay any attention as to what's happening in Africa or South America, that it's just really not of interest to us, which means that we wouldn't care what happens in the Philippines or India or any place that's south of the equator. That doesn't seem likely, that we would have no espionage capability. I mean, we're spending hundreds of billions of dollars a year on our espionage. So what is the issue? If it's not race, if it's not geography, is it that those who are in power are scared to death of Islam? That when you have an organization like Boko Haram, who is resolutely Islamic, that cites the Quran, that claims that they are acting in the name of Allah, that it's such an embarrassment to the lie that they've been promoting of this war on a tactic, the war on terrorism, and disassociating Islam from terrorism, that it makes everything that they're doing look like a lie. And that seems to be the only credible answer. But nonetheless, we finally have a group of nations that say that they're going to jump in and save the day. And they're going to provide the intelligence. They're going to help the beleaguered Nigeria out. They're going to find these girls and bring them back. Can you imagine the mighty United States not able to find 300 kidnapped girls? Welcome back to Shattering This. The United States has spent a lot of time tongue-lashing two countries. Yeah, we've done more than two. There are two countries in particular that we've been extraordinarily aggressive tongue-lashing here recently. One, of course, is Russia. And even though America provoked the Ukrainian uprising, and we were the provocateurs, everything out of Washington blames Russia. It's all Putin's planning. Well, on the other side of the globe, we're blaming China as being provocative. We're blaming them for being provocative for drilling in their waters. We're drilling them for being provocative and setting up an air defense zone. Of course, their air defense zone is a tiny fraction of the size of the American air defense zone, and that their claim to territorial waters is thinner than America's claim to territorial waters. And then we accuse them of espionage, of stealing our secrets, when America is vastly more involved stealing Chinese secrets and spying on the Chinese than the Chinese ever dreamed to be in terms of being on America. And the thing that is just so amazing about this is that America can't survive without China and Russia. Now, Europe is in desperate shape without Russia. The United States is really only dependent upon Russia for a narrow number of things. They make our rocket engines. We can't launch satellites. They're responsible for ferrying astronauts back and forth the International Space Station, because we don't have a manned space program anymore, to which the last series of economic sanctions against Russia announced that that the United States had better build a very effective trampoline to get its astronauts off that space station. The Russia also has the world market cornered on some very specific rare earth elements, particularly those used in the military and aviation business. For example, Airbuses are vulnerable to losing their tails. There's been a series of Airbus crashes, one over the Atlantic leaving the Brazilian coast that became quite famous, another one leaving one of the three New York airports that crashed, killed everybody on board because the tails, the vertical stabilizer, broke off because the bolt is, as a steel bolt that is holding them in place, as opposed to Boeing uses a titanium bolt. And it's a very specific alloy of titanium. And the titanium for the bolt comes from one place, Russia. In fact, the United States engages in all sorts of CIA-related deceptions in terms of the purchase of titanium from Russia. Our jet engines rely on titanium, both commercial and military. Much of our drones and most sophisticated technologies, our satellites, require titanium. It's lightweight and extraordinarily strong, and without it, there's all sorts of issues. You can't replace it with aluminum. It's not strong enough, and it melts at too low a temperature. And so if we say, we're going to continue to put sanctions on Russia, we're in serious jeopardy. But it's vastly worse with China. A huge percentage of the components for the things that America actually does assemble here are made in China. Overwhelming. If we stopped importing Chinese parts, we wouldn't be making automobiles. Chinese factories make the overwhelming preponderance of our cell phones, of our iPads, of our laptop computers and our desktop computers. Most of the technology products that we use every day, including when we watch television, they're made in China. But not only are those things made in China, China has a 80 to 90% monopoly on rare earth elements. And the few places where they don't have an absolute monopoly, and they do on most of the most important rare earth elements that are used in every form of technology today, then they have bought the mines and the land and the companies that extract the elements from places all over the world. They are absolutely dominant. If you were to say, we want to no longer do business with China, we'd be done. This next story is from Reuters. It begins, China's provocative action in maritime disputes with its neighbors is straining ties with the United States, raising questions about how the world's two biggest economies can work together, a U.S. official said. Now, in the Reuters story, the U.S. official is unnamed. But he's willing to say, or she is willing to say, that it makes us question as to whether or not the world's two biggest economies can work together. It's astonishing that we as a nation employ individuals that have this little understanding of economics. If China were to decide to stop doing business with the United States could not survive it. If China were to decide to immediately sell its $1.4, $1.5 trillion investment in treasury bills, the value of the dollar would collapse instantaneously. If China stopped doing business with America, we would be in a recession or depression that would rival 1929 instantaneously. We could not survive it. As a matter of fact, China, about a year ago decided that, they were destroying their countryside with open strip mines and with leaching mines for the rare earth elements, and that they needed to radically diminish the amount of these elements that they were extracting from the ground until such time as they could come up with a more environmentally appropriate way to extract them. And the United States sued China. And there was an international court decision that said that China, since it controls 80 to 90% of these rare earth elements, could not reduce the amount that they were offering for sale. And that no matter how disruptive it was on the environment in China, they had to supply them. And that their 40% diminishment was against international law. Now, again, international law, it's interesting that the United States precludes drilling in Anwar. Just shut down the permits for the largest copper mine, copper and gold mine, in the United States. That happened to be the Pebble Mine in Alaska. And it routinely forbids leases to explore gas and drill for gas and oil off the California coast, off the eastern shore of the United States, and is diminishing permits in the Gulf of Mexico. And the United States is penalizing to the tune of billions of dollars mining companies for past acts where there is a legacy of pollution associated with their mines, making it essentially impossible for many companies to continue to mine. And yet we sued China, telling them that they had no choice, that they had to go ahead and destroy their country to extract these rare earth elements that we wanted, and they had to sell them to us. And China said, yeah, right. Good luck with that. We are menacing China just as we're menacing Russia on every possible front, and yet we are wholly dependent upon them. We sued Russia or China for these rare earth elements because the 40% diminishment had an enormous effect on our ability to continue to manufacture weapons and spy systems. That's what it was all about. So what's the consequence of all of this? Who is it that is incapable of seeing the hypocrisy of this and the fact that these kinds of gestures are suicidal? And by the way, it's not China that's being provocative with their oil rig. It's Vietnam. Vietnam has ran into the Chinese ships. Vietnam sent out the ships to menace the oil rig. It's not China that's being provocative. Quote, this is raising some fundamental questions about China's long-term strategic intentions, the U.S. official told Reuters, speaking on the condition of anonymity because he or she didn't want to reveal the fact that he is or she is a complete ignoramus. It's a he. He said that Beijing's move appeared to fit a pattern of advancing territorial claims through coercion and intimidation. They're not coercing anyone. They're not trying to intimidate anyone. If you pull an oil rig, which you paid a fortune for, into a position where it can drill for oil, which the world needs, you're not trying to intimidate someone. You're not trying to coerce them. I mean, wake up. I mean, it's as if America's leadership is seeing the world through funny glasses. China's activities are straining the U.S.-China relationship because it raises questions about our ability to partner together in Asia or even bilaterally. No, it doesn't. It raises questions about can anyone do business with the United States? Just look at what the United States is doing here recently. We force banks to have billions of dollars of reserves in U.S. currency to support the U.S. dollar. And then when they don't apply our rules to their clients and their countries, we sue them in the United States. There was, $2.5 billion just recently for Credit Suisse. Prior to that, another $1.5 billion, $2 billion for UBS. Toyota got a $2 billion penalty from the Justice Department when their crime, if you want to call it a crime, was infinitesimal compared to GM's, and GM was fined some $20 or $30 million. We are becoming pirates and using our judicial system to pirate money away from international companies. So we are becoming impossible to do business with. And then you start doing business with the United States like Russia was doing, and we say, okay, we're not going to allow a Visa or MasterCard to provide credit functions. So, you force Russia to develop a competitor to Visa and MasterCard. China already has. We say, all right, we're going to create ways that America can ship gas to Europe so that Russia can't sell gas to Europe anymore. So what does Russia do? They sign a $400 billion multi-year agreement with China. Signed it today. So here's China and Russia saying, okay, we don't want to play with the United States. Too costly to play with the United States. You're too unreliable. You're too annoying. So we'll work together as Russia and China. $400 billion deal. Now what's going to happen? You know, we are threatening Russia that it can't cut off its gas supply to the Ukraine. And yet the Ukraine is $2.5 billion in arrear in payments. And Russia said that starting the first of next month, unless we are paid the $2.5 billion that we're owed, and unless the Ukraine pays by an advance guarantees letter of credit payment, we're not going to send gas to them or through them anymore. It's the natural position that Russia would have to take. The Western Ukraine has become an annoyance. Why in the world should they be giving them free gas? And they're not going to. And so Russia's saying, we don't need this annoyance. We'll do business over here with China. Thank you very much. It seems like as a country, we're no longer thinking through the consequences of our rhetoric. And that we're putting America in a very isolated position where we don't have any credibility with anyone in the world. Now, the whole situation with China and Russia is disastrous. Here's the announcement. It's from Reuters. China and Russia signed a long-awaited $400 billion gas deal on Wednesday, securing the world's top energy user, a major new source of cleaner fuel, and opening new markets for Moscow as Europeans look elsewhere for their energy. The issue here, too, is bigger than just a $400 billion deal. It's on natural gas. Russia has more natural gas reserves than any other country in the world. And natural gas is the optimum fuel. It burns cleanly. It is extraordinarily efficient in doing many things, including running factories and producing electricity. It is a vastly superior fuel today than petroleum. And Russia is not only a dominant resource, but has the pipeline infrastructure. Now, in this particular case, Russia and China are jointly going to build the additional pipelines to get the gas from Siberia along the Chinese coast where it is most needed. And so here even now you have the rhetoric of Americans saying, oh, but, they had to take a much lower price because China knew that they were desperate. Oh, no, they didn't. They're going to sell their gas for almost identical prices as to what they're selling the gas for in Europe. And the prices are benchmarked the same way the European prices are benchmark, and the prices are already, you know, 1,000 times the cost of extraction, and you're dealing with pure profit anyway. So that is the future, creating partnerships that are completely isolating America. And in the past, the $55 billion that Russia is going to spend in exploration and in pipeline construction, and the $38 billion that Russia is, or that China is going to spend to facilitate all of this, so that within 3 years they are enormous trading partners, that what you're going to see in all of this is that American companies that would have been given the opportunity to develop that infrastructure are going to be precluded. Now what? Now what are you doing to your people, to your citizens, to even your tax income and revenue streams? Everything we do seems to be counterproductive. You know, it's like we finally lifted sanctions on Iran, and what happened? Russia and Iran announced the largest trade deal ever. Be back in a moment. This is a related story. Outraged by U.S. cyber spying charges against members of a secretive Chinese military unit, China summoned the U.S. ambassador in Beijing for a dressing down, state media said on Tuesday. And the defense ministry blasted the U.S. accusations as hypocritical. If you were paying attention yesterday to the news, all over the news, the United States was accusing Beijing of spying, named specific industries that it was spying on, and said that it wouldn't be tolerated, and we were condemning China for doing it. Now, the fact of the matter is, it's America that's spying on China. It's overwhelmingly so. China's internet controllers, meanwhile, published new statistics that they said show massive cyber attacks on China that are originating from the United States. Quote, those activities against the Chinese leaders, against ordinary Chinese citizens, against anyone with a mobile phone, the state-run Jingzhou news agency reported. In the meantime, the U.S. repeatedly accuses China of spying and hacking. You know, it may be the case, but if it's the case, what we've got here is a spitwad against a nuclear bomb. That's the difference between the United States spying efforts against China and invasiveness of Chinese secrets and property rights and intellectual rights and privacy rights against China's spying against the United States. We're dealing with a spitwad against a nuclear bomb. Probably true that China is doing some espionage in the United States. But the massive amount of espionage the United States is doing in China is almost infinitely greater. And for the United States to accuse them is the same tactic that politicians use. If you're a politician and you're guilty of something, you blame your opponent of the very thing you're guilty of. Because at the very least, you're going to muddy the water. And so when your opponent says, no, I'm not guilty of this, it's you that are guilty of that, it creates confusion. And so the United States creates an aura of smoke and confusion over its massive spying apparatus by accusing others that it is spying on of spying on us. The day after the Justice Department unveiled its explosive criminal cyber espionage charges against five Chinese military officers, Beijing was still sputtering with indignation, and diplomats and cyber experts on both sides were trying to figure out how to pick up the pieces. In a salvo of Monday rhetoric, the Chinese Foreign Ministry called the charges in a U.S. federal grand jury indictment purely fictitious and extremely absurd. China also announced that it was suspending its participation in the Sino-U.S. Cyber Working Group formed to bridge differences over cyber spying. In a lengthy statement on Tuesday, the Defense Ministry of China invoked WikiLeaks and their comprehensive reports and recent disclosures of the National Security Agency's spying on China, where particularly with Huawei, the big Chinese telecommunications company that America was saying, no one can buy Huawei products that does business in the United States because the Chinese military will use the telecommunications technology to spy on Americans, when in fact the NSA had already breached through Huawei's databases, was stealing Huawei technology, and was eavesdropping on the telephone calls of Huawei executives. The indictment accused five members of the People's Liberation Army Unit in Shanghai of hacking into U.S. computers and stealing valuable trade secrets from leading steel, nuclear plant, and solar firms, which is just so absurd. America is not a leader in manufacturing steel. Not even close. We're a bit player in steel. We are a bit player in the nuclear business. We've only got two companies that even toy in it, and both of those companies have had to form alliances with international companies even to stay viable in the business. We are way behind the curve when it comes to nuclear power plants. And the third was solar power firms. When we changed the landscape in terms of tax incentives for solar energy, we essentially negated our solar industry. As a matter of fact, the big Obama investment into solar energy in a business failed miserably. The company went bankrupt. We aren't even leaders in those industries.